You can't outrun your demons. Aunt Charlie's voice echoed through my mind as I leaned forward slightly and increased my pace in an attempt to do just that. I supposed I knew she was right somewhere in the back of my mind, although after a particularly long run, the pain in my body occupied my mind, allowing my soul to rest. But the relief never lasted. Guilt, I'd learned, was the sort of emotion that bore down into the darkest corners of your mind, setting up a foothold from which to drive you crazy with thoughts, which, when examined in the cold light of day, were both destructive and pointless. My heart raced as I pushed my legs to the limit, running harder and faster as the inky black night lightened to a pre-dawn gray. Before the incident that would forever change my life, I'd been happy and optimistic. I was a glass-half-full person in a glass-half-empty world. I'd been the sort who expected the best in people, and in return, had tried my hardest to give others the best of myself. And then Conrad Baker came into my life. As the sky lightened and the last of the stars faded from view, I paused, gasping deeply as my heart rate slowed and my lungs filled with clean sea air. Turning toward the east, I willed my mind to focus on the sky as it turned from gray to red to pink and eventually to blue. "It's going to be a beautiful day," I said to Captain Jack, the terrier mix who lived at the resort with Aunt Charlie, her father-in-law Hank, my sisters Emily and Rory, and Emily's daughters, Estelle and Esther. "I especially love the way the pinks and grays mix as the sun makes its way toward the horizon." Jack tilted his head, making it appear as if he really was trying to understand. I reached down to pet him under the chin, and then turned and began walking down the beach toward the westernmost tip of the peninsula. I'd always loved the resort early in the morning when the guests were still asleep, and it was just me with the birds that flocked to the shore in search of their breakfast. Sometimes, during my early morning runs, I'd be fortunate enough to see dolphins off the point, but it looked as if they were sleeping in today. Once I passed the point, I set off again, slowing my pace just a bit as I neared the old pier that jutted out into the deep sapphire water that surrounded the island. This particular pier was unique in its position on the very southern end of Shipwreck Island. Most days, you could stand on the same pier to witness both the sunrise from the east and the sunset to the west. Deciding to take a break and enjoy the early morning surfers spread out over the breaking waves, I stepped onto splintered planks. The waves were somewhat lazy today, which wouldn't provide much of a challenge for experienced surfers. But even on days such as this, the sun still shone, and the water still beckoned. When I reached the end of the pier, I turned and looked back at the resort where I'd spent a good part of my childhood. My parents died in an automobile accident when I was 9. So I, along with my sisters, Emily and Rory, had moved to the resort at the southernmost tip of Shipwreck Island. Named for Jack Hamilton, the man who built the resort in 1935, it was an amazing place, with pools, restaurants, lodges, and cabanas that stretched out like a long arm hugging the bay on the east and then jutting out toward the west. As a child, I'd found solace on the sandy shores of Castaway Bay, so I supposed it wasn't surprising that, as a child, I'd found solace on the sandy shores of Castaway Bay, so I supposed it wasn't surprising that I'd return when I found myself yearning for solace once again. Deciding it was best to give Jack a few minutes to rest before we continued, I took out my cell phone and checked my messages.
"This call is for Cindy Whitmore. My name is Yvonne Colton, and I'm a psychologist with the FBI. I need you to call me to set up the first of what I assume will be a series of sessions in the aftermath of your incident with Conrad Baker."